SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back into the Early Line. Live right here on Sports Grid for hour number two on this Monday morning. I am Kevin Walsh, joined by Donnie Wrightside. We finished Sunday in hour number one. We go to Saturday. Don't worry, it was also absolutely wild. The only difference, not a lot of scoring on Saturday. Good for the unders if you were so inclined. The San Francisco 49ers stunned the Green Bay Packers. There's no other way to put it. It was a stunner. You can say, I believed in them going in. That's fair. I don't think that you are lying. But at the end of the day, Donnie, we were deep into this football game. And Jimmy Garoppolo didn't look like he was ever going to lead a touchdown drive. And the Green Bay Packers went to punt with less than 5 minutes left. And up in the sky, that punt went. And it fell down at about the 3-yard line after being blocked. And it was a scoop and score touchdown. The Packers get the football back, and it is now tied 10-10. Three plays, negative 6 yards, and Aaron Rodgers never takes the field again as the Niners walk it off 13-10 in Lambeau. Your reaction to the number one seed, unbeaten at home in the regular season, Green Bay Packers losing to Jimmy Garoppolo and the San Francisco 49ers.
Overall for this weekend, Kevin, four games, right? I looked at this game on Saturday night and said to myself, this is the easiest one for Green Bay. They're home. They're rested. They're ready. You don't beat them at home. It's cold temperatures there. Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers are a West Coast team. And quite frankly, the 49ers are banged up. You should get erased. And here we go. First drive of the game. Boom, boom, boom. Right down the field. 7-0 Green Bay Packers. And the only thing I'm looking at is like, hey, man, I thought the under 47.5 was a good shot. Looks like the Packers might lay 35 by themselves. And then the Packers do what they do well. They say, okay, it's 7-0. We don't have to score anymore. I have the most talented quarterback in football overall at home here. And let's not hit the gas pedal. Let's hit the brake pedal. Just pump it and say, let's just not make a mistake here because I don't think San Francisco can score. What if I told you here before the game? By the way, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to have 11.9 QBR rating, and he's going to win this football game. How could you have imagined this game also, Kevin, on the opening drive by the Green Bay Packers where they punch it in for 7 and immediately at the commercial break go, Packers only getting 3 the rest of the way. You think, what? Did you just watch that drive? They're going to Swiss cheese this team all the way down the field. You can't stop Devontae Adams in that offense. Well, they did. And I can't understand how the Green Bay Packers want to. And maybe, Kevin, it's just Aaron Rodgers. One of the most talented quarterbacks to ever play the game gets to a Super Bowl and wins it and can never get back to the Super Bowl. I would never have fathomed that when you watch that, you know, decade ago, him beating the Pittsburgh Steelers and going, this is going to happen every other year, as if Tom Brady, who always seemingly gets back to the Super Bowl, and he can't get over that hump. And it's always, Kevin, the 49ers that are able to do it to him. A physical team beating up the Green Bay Packers, but overall in this game, I don't see any – I still can't believe they lost. You're also talking about a 7-0 lead right before the half. They hit that monster play to Aaron Jones down the sideline. Oh, 10-0 at the break. This game's over. They get the field goal block, but the special teams unit that they always talked about being so horrendous for Green Bay reared its ugly head at the worst possible moments here in the divisional round.
Ultimately, that special teams unit that Matt LaFleur, I believe, told the broadcast crew before the game, I hope they don't lose the game for us. Yikes. A blocked field goal, a blocked punt that was scooped and scored for a touchdown, and the game-winning field goal by the Niners, they proceeded to put only 10 men on the field. They probably weren't going to block it anyway, but at least try. What are you going to send out? Nobody? All in all, a nightmare's nightmare for the special teams, Donnie. But at the end of the day, and I think we would both absolutely agree on this, but let's welcome the radio audience into the fold first. We'll see if they agree. The radio audience is in full effect. We appreciate you all who are tuned in to the Early Line on Sports Grid Radio. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wrightside here on this Monday morning talking Packers, Niners. Donnie, I tell you, hey, Niners are going to score 13 points. Who wins the game? Green Bay. Niners, Green Bay win, they cover. They probably embarrassed them. Donnie, 7-0. 8 more drives, no more touchdowns. No more excuses. Donnie, if that was Patrick Mahomes, slander. Josh Allen, slander. Brady, Stafford, Garoppolo, Tannehill, Burrow. Slander, slander, slander. Aaron Rodgers is an all-time great. I understand that the special teams unit was a disaster in this game. You cannot excuse this team at home scoring 10 points and 3 after the opening possession of this game. That is inexcusable, Donnie.
Yeah, Randall Cobb also at this point, you know, one target in that game, no catches. How about this? 9 catches for Aaron Jones, 9 catches for Devontae Adams. So I'm pretty surprised that Aaron Rodgers, Kevin, didn't take the podium and say, boy, you know what? If we had Jake Coomer out, like I said we should always have, Kevin, we would have won this football game easily. No, Aaron, this is your team. This is the team that they built for you. And also, heading into next offseason is $40 million over the cap. Because why? They went all in and said, Aaron, you're the missing piece here. You're the best player in the field. Win this game for us. We are at home so many times playing so well through to the regular season, but just can't come up big in the biggest moments of the game, including a lead at home. I don't want to hear any of this nonsense. Oh, this, they should have just went for it on fourth down instead of getting the punt blocked here. Step up and make a play, because correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, when they blocked that punt, scored a touchdown, the game was tied, and Green Bay still got the football back with plenty of time to go 3 and out and give it right back to the San Francisco 49ers.
Absolutely true. Though, to be fair, I don't know, maybe don't let Julio go to Tennessee or Odell to LA or waste draft picks on useless corners, useless tight ends. Oh, and of course, Jordan Love. We'll keep breaking this one down on the other side.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on the early line, recapping Niners-Packers. 13-10, San Francisco wins this game. Green Bay, the lowest scoring team of the entire weekend. We'll hit the Green Bay side again, but Donnie, it's the Niners who advance to the NFC Championship game as the sixth seed. The road, again, at Dallas, at Green Bay, but you go to the regular season, again, at the Rams, nearly winning at Tennessee, at Cincinnati. They've proven this all year long. And I will say this, Jimmy Garoppolo is impressively on this run to an NFC title game and has done absolutely nothing to keep his job in San Francisco. Donnie, your reaction to the Niners moving forward here to that NFC championship game?
I don't know how they're doing it, but they are doing it at this point, and you're right here. So you're taking a look at a quarterback controversy, even to enter the year, where it's like saying, hey, we're going to mortgage our future for our franchise guy, even though we're paying a guy currently here who should be our franchise guy, but he's not. He's going to manage us through the regular season. We're going to get a wild card. We're going to beat Dallas, which he wasn't a great quarterback in that game. We're going to beat the Packers. He wasn't a great quarterback in this game. Let's just say they go, because they own the Los Angeles Rams, particularly over the past, you know, decade, if you're not decade, I should say, you know, in that whole Sean McVay scheme. Now you're going to win this game and then get to the Super Bowl. What happens if Jimmy Garoppolo wins the Super Bowl? And again, it is not the deciding factor. A quarterback that went all the way through and won a Super Bowl is going to be, you know, out of town in San Francisco, because that's Trey Lance's football team. But I don't want to get ahead of myself at this point, because I don't know how they're doing it. Mm-hmm. So immediately, we look forward to next week, the 49ers and the Rams. I'm not giving the 49ers much of a shot. I don't care that they won 4 or 5 games in a row over Sean McVay. Sometimes you just have to let the statistics and what your eyes tell you here. And I guess we can factor in Stafford, 17 of 41, 3 interceptions, 1 touchdown pass, Cam Akers, 3 fumbles, and the Niners win. But the way I handicap games and try to take a look at it overall, the 49ers are a good football team. They're going to be in the NFC Championship game. That doesn't happen by accident, but it feels more accidental that they actually are getting to this point here, because if you looked at the first two games here from the Rams' perspective, right? Much better performance week one. Last week, they should have won much easier than they did yesterday, having a 27-3 lead. But looking forward for the 49ers, I don't want to doubt them. But at the end of the game, Kevin, Trent Williams banged up. You saw Deebo Samuel banged up now with an ankle injury. What are we looking forward to here now?
Look, all in all, and I think it's a great point you bring up there, you know, half the bat, you need to leave the game healthy, right? Kittle looked a little nicked up, I think, even too, as they were kind of coming to the close of that football game there. The only thing I can say for San Francisco, maybe
we didn't give their defense enough credit coming into the playoffs there. Deebo Samuel, star of the show. Garoppolo is so divisive. How do you not talk about him? Obviously, Kyle Shanahan, one of the great offensive minds the sport has seen. I don't care if people think that's too much. It's very obvious when you watch Kyle Shanahan draw everything up for the San Francisco team. But getting Bosa back, Tony, was very, very important. Look, they sacked Aaron Rodgers 5 times. Nick Bosa accounted for 2 of those. Fred Warner tied for the team leading tackles, making sure that Fred Warner was available, Donnie. Very important. They probably don't win this game. In fact, Donnie, they don't win this game if they don't have Nick Bosa and or Fred Warner most likely out there for the Green Bay Packers. But I think for the San Francisco 49ers, at the end of the day, as you are on this run, you're sat there going, man, only if Rodgers requested that trade a little bit earlier, huh? Because here's the thing, Donnie, and I understand. Listen, Rodgers' slander has been earned for countless reasons. But a lot of people said, man, you know, Rodgers coming back, you know, to bite himself when he said the Niners are going to regret not drafting him. Ooh, well, now look, you know, they're 4-0 against him in the playoffs. Let me tell you something right now, man, okay? If you think there's any world, you know, the San Francisco 49ers won that deal by not drafting Aaron Rodgers, you're living on another planet. You're living on another planet. The Niners haven't won a Super Bowl, Donnie, unless I missed one. Did I miss one, Donnie?
Yeah.
That they won without Aaron Rodgers? Meanwhile, Donnie, how many Super Bowls do the San Francisco 49ers win if they draft Aaron Rodgers? 70? I mean, what are we even talking about here? What?
Yeah, you're right about it. And you also saw some of those video clips that were playing before the game yesterday where he was still, you know, just got drafted out of the green room. They asked him basically like, hey, how's it feel like the 49ers passed over you? Well, not as bad as it's going to feel for the 49ers when, you know, I basically paced them for the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. Now, it hasn't happened here, but you're right. If Aaron Rodgers was in a system with Kyle Shanahan with those weapons, they probably would be doing some damage. But also, Kevin, we always like to look into the future, right? For the Green Bay Packers, what this means for the franchise, and if Aaron Rodgers is going to come back. We'll do that a little bit later in the week. But there's a little part of me that says, you know, everybody crowning Matt LaFleur as the great young head football coach and boy genius here. If Aaron Rodgers does move on, and Jordan Love takes the reins next year, and Aaron Rodgers, you can pencil in for like 13 wins every single year, regardless of if it ends up in a championship. I really need to see that in 2022 in Green Bay.
I hope so, because it's more fun that way for me. And we'll do this now, and we'll do it more tomorrow, and the day after, and the day after, and the day after. But I know, Donnie, that you and I have talked about, would Rodgers leave? And I said to you, once they clinched that perfect regular season record at Lambeau, I go, Donnie, if they don't make the Super Bowl, that means their first home loss comes in the postseason. And you'd have to try and imagine such a nightmare loss, Donnie, that could possibly push them out. I always think back to when Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City, like the absolute coward he was when he made that decision, ultimately by going to Golden State. Leaving was fine. But really, Donnie, it was blowing a 3-1 lead to Golden State, right? It was the way they lost that made it probably for him something he couldn't stomach going back. Donnie, you're Rodgers. You've now been to 3 straight NFC championship games. You draw dead again. You probably can bring Devontae wherever you want to go. And you can go, Donnie, wherever you want to go. Aaron Rodgers, last game as a Green Bay Packer?
I don't think so. I don't think so still, because I still think the best possible spot for Aaron Rodgers is in Green Bay. Yes, they're going to be way over the salary cap. We know that. But again, I'm going to preface this. Look right into the camera at me, guys. There is no salary cap in the NFL. They'll tell you there is one, but how about this? 3 strokes of a pen, and they're $15 million under the salary cap. If he comes in the offseason and says, I want to make one last run at it, you're going to sign Devontae Adams to a massive deal. But the only problem is that defense is going to take a couple hits here because there's some big money free agents that you can't technically bring everybody back unless you want to. But then again, look what Tom Brady and Tampa Bay were able to do in the offseason. Hey, we have a Super Bowl championship roster. Everybody is a free agent. Whoop, 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 whoop. Hey, we're under the cap, and every single starter is back for the season. It can happen, and if Green Bay wants it to happen and Aaron Rodgers wants it to happen, it will happen in Green Bay.
I think that's – look, the NFL salary cap is an absolute myth. I'll hear no arguments on the contrary. Is. But all in all, if you're Aaron Rodgers, DRS, like – look, watch that LeBron playbook. Look around. Ooh, they're not getting the job done here, huh? All right, leave them in absolute disarray, and why don't you go skip town and find yourself in a situation a little bit better, huh? Because at the end of the day, this something's not working here in Green Bay. Something is just not... Like, here's it now. People are like, the Niners are a bad matchup. The Niners' offense didn't score a touchdown. Anyone who thought the Niners were a bad matchup, it was because they were going to pound the rock. There was 3.7 yards per carry. Deebo Samuel had maybe his least efficient game of the season. Now, Donnie, like, this wasn't even really about the Niners. Like, this Green Bay throttled down. We already won the game. They already won the game. What, on the opening drive?
Yeah.
8 straight offensive drives. No touchdowns. What? The MVP. You got to give that award away. You got to give it away. I know it's a regular season award, Don. You got to give the MVP away. Give it a Cooper Kupp or something. He can't get this. Nonsense.
There's going to be a lot of slander. I'm waiting for the slander here that comes out because of how underperforming the Packers are, and he's going to get that MVP trophy. Mm-hmm. My goodness. Oh, yeah. It is going to be one to watch on social media for sure.
I tell you what, though. He's going to get to that stand and be like, now I got a couple things to get off my chest. Here to be booing him at the awards ceremony. We go to the Titans-Bengals after the break. This is the Early Line, live on a Monday morning.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Sports Grid. One game left, Titans-Bengals. A walk-off winner. Imagine Donnie telling someone as Evan McPherson makes that final field goal, a 52-yarder, that was going to be the most boring game of the divisional round. And that's not even like, that's just craziness here. Look, Cincinnati wins as a 3.5, 4-point dog. Number kept moving in Tennessee's favor. The story of this game, Donnie, Ryan Tannehill probably 15 of 24, 220 passing, 1 touchdown, 3 interceptions. Derrick Henry coming back, and let's call it what it is, not looking like the best running back on his team. Donta Foreman maybe should have got the football a little bit more. You tell me, Donnie. Titans-Bengals, what was your big takeaway?
My big takeaway is, yes, Ryan Tannehill just didn't step up to the plate in this game. You can't have 3 interceptions. And you set the table, Kevin, right away in the game. Ooh, let's go play action pass. I'm going to throw an easy interception where I stare down my wide receiver and off to the races we go. You can't have that. But also, late in the football game, you have to know better. There's 35 seconds to go. It's your job to dink and dunk, move it down, possibly get in the field goal range with a chance for your football team to win and have zero chance that the other team gets the football or even has a chance to win. And you throw in the middle of a pack. And also, Kevin, it's one thing to say, hey, man, it's my guy all year long. A.J. Brown's always done it for me. Tried to fit into a tight spot, not there. Or, ooh, Julio Jones. We made a big-time trade for Julio in the offseason. It just wasn't there, you know. Guy made a nice play on it. You throw it to a backup wide receiver, and that's what happens. And the fact that the Cincinnati Bengals rolled down the field and won. But also, this game came down to me, Kevin. In the fourth quarter, you had a 3rd and 1 while you're driving with 8 minutes to go in a tie ball game. You run some sort of read option where Tannehill keeps the football instead of just giving it to the running back and head full steam up the middle, knock a guy down, and get a first down. So then you go to 4th and 1, and then you run a play that every single person on that Cincinnati Bengals defense knows exactly what's going to take place. And you run sort of like a delay off tackle play to Derrick Henry, who clearly is still a dominant football player, but not as dominant of what we saw before the injury this year. And also, your point is brought up so well here. Foreman. 4 carries, 66 yards. It was unbelievable down the stretch for the Tennessee Titans holding down that running game. He didn't get enough touches in this game overall, I believe. But this game came down to me. 3rd and 1, the Titans are supposed to convert that, march down the field, touchdown, field goal, take the lead, put the pressure back on the Bengals, and they couldn't do it.
Ultimately, I don't know if this will land, but I feel like the Titans played rock, paper, scissors all game and guessed wrong every single time. Like, you know, Donnie, where you're like, okay, they think I'm throwing rock, but then they probably won't expect me to throw rock. Like, to open it up with a play-action pass and have Ryan Tannehill picked off, probably don't do that. Here's the interesting thing, though, Donnie, about that third-and-one keeper. Every single time I feel like Ryan Tannehill's ever done that in Tennessee, it's worked. Like, that's the play he uses to walk into the end zone. It was a great job by Cincinnati shutting it down. But here's the thing about something like that, though, then, Donnie. On fourth and one, well, now I know what you're doing. Because you're not, again, here's the thing about this game. They weren't going to let Tannehill lose the game. And he still did. Three interceptions, all more heartbreaking than the next. Again, the opening play of the game puts you in a bad spot, gives them points early. On first and goal at the 9-yard line, heartbreaking. And then the final one there, Donnie, gives the Cincinnati Bengals the football back for the win. You were at midfield and probably going to ice that game. And I think, Donnie, we'll get to the Cincinnati side in just a moment here. But I absolutely think the Tennessee Titans would be right to ask themselves about the quarterback position moving forward. And certainly that's probably boosted, Donnie, by watching the other AFC game being played, right? Or even the quarterback on the other sideline here in Joe Burrow. But ultimately, Donnie, one of my favorite plays of the weekend, I talked about it and live tweeted the whole deal, was this Ryan Tannehill under passing yards. And listen, A.J. Brown tried to do everything in his power to ruin that, who was unbelievable in this football game. But Donnie, the 220 yards that he threw for here in this, by far the most he's thrown for in a postseason game. He has multiple postseason games on him where he's thrown for under 100 yards. Because the objective of this, right, is to just hand the football off to Derrick Henry. We talk about Carson Wentz, right? Part of the reason the Colts want to move on from Carson Wentz, if the opportunity is there, is having Jonathan Taylor and that offensive line be as good as they are is great. But I shouldn't have to rely on a run game as much as I potentially do. Donnie, Ryan Tannehill has been great for the Tennessee Titans. Really, like, Donnie, they weren't this when it was Marcus Mariota. That's the truth of the matter. But there's going to be a lot of upgrades potentially out there. And I think the Tennessee Titans find themselves in that Philadelphia Eagles, Indianapolis Colts, Cleveland's Brown buckets of, if something's better's out there, we got to take a long look at it.
No, and you're right, because this is a very good franchise. So it's not one of those destinations that we were talking about before this game, like, hey, well, maybe if we move on from Ryan Tannehill, can we put an Aaron Rodgers, you know, in that position, or make a trade for another Deshaun Watson, which probably won't happen inside the division, or Russell Wilson out in Seattle. That's now up for debate, because why? Ryan Tannehill was terrible in this football game. And it wasn't one of those, Kevin, where you saw them lose to Houston during the season. Okay, you know, rainy day at home, everybody's banged up, it happens, it's the NFL any given Sunday. But the fact that they were the number one overall seed, favorite in this game, rested and ready, and as healthy as they ever were going to be, you expected Ryan Tannehill to come out and put on a performance. It doesn't have to be great, Kevin. 21 of 27, 260, two touchdowns, no interceptions, running game works. They move on to the AFC Championship game and host it here. But it was such a dismal performance that every time you felt the Titans were going to get back into this game, Ryan Tannehill did something foolish. You know, first play of the game, you can't have that. You're more like just, Kevin, run the ball three times up the middle and punt it. Say, okay, let's settle into this one. An interception on the first play for the Titans was hilarious to watch. And then also, that RPO that got intercepted when they were first in goal. Ryan Tannehill has a lot of options on that play. This wasn't like snap it, no read, throw it out to the wide receiver. It was designed to say, okay, if they give you that look, well, the DB blitzes off the end. Even if, Kevin, if you would have held it for an extra split second, throw a pump fake. That play is wide open here. He threw it right into a defender who made a sensational play. And, you know, nine times out of ten, it's probably just an incomplete pass. But in that big of a moment where you need points and possibly a touchdown to get yourself back in it when you're down double digits, and then they still had that chance late in the game to throw a horrendous interception. Because again, Kevin, if they just say he throws it into the ground, they punt it, they go to overtime, maybe they can settle in here. Yeah. The fact of the matter is, the Bengals had absolutely zero chance to win that in regulation. And Tana said, know what? I don't believe that. Here's a really good chance to beat us here before we even get to extras.
Also, it was just one of those spots where Derrick Henry comes back and it's Derrick Henry. So you got to give it a Derrick Henry. But Donnie, Dante Foreman looked better. He looked fresher. And it's one of those things where maybe hindsight's 20/20 DRS, right? And if you go 50-50 workload on Derrick Henry and Dante Foreman, and Dante Foreman doesn't have it, it's going to be an absolute, you know, tons of backlash that would have come Mike Vrabel and ultimately the Tennessee Titans' way. I get that. I get it. He's your guy. But Donnie, the first carry I believe Dante Foreman got of the game was that 45-yard slash. you should have been working him in a little bit more. I think that's fair to say. And again, I know I have the benefit of hindsight here, Donnie. I know I do. But it doesn't make so much sense. This guy hasn't played football in months. Give him 20 carries. He only goes 3.1 per carry. Donnie, not a single Derrick Henry run goes for 10 yards or more. That's tough, Donnie. You probably should have worked in Dante Foreman a little bit more here to give your offense just a little bit more pop because it didn't have it on the ground, Donnie.
Yeah, it's all hindsight at this point now because he did get 20 carries for 62 yards and a touchdown. I know we talked about last week, like, hey, if you're looking for a touchdown prop, it's still not a bad idea for Derrick Henry, even if he wasn't at 100%, which he wasn't, because you knew he was going to get those goal line carries, and he did on a wildcat formation and punched it in. But I thought, you know, there's a couple missing parts here because Ryan Tannehill only threw the ball 24 times. I talked about it a lot last week saying, okay, let's just say Derrick Henry, who they know inside there, he can't be 100%. You're not going to have a bone plate in your foot and just reappear on the football field and be the best running back in the game. But you thought he could be effective, but even more, Kevin, effective being a decoy on a play-action pass. Because I was trying to factor in and say, what's going to work well for the Tennessee Titans here? Everybody's healthy. The wide receivers should absolutely do damage on the outside, and basically they did. 5 for 142 for A.J. Brown, 6 for 62 for Julio Jones. They got nothing from anybody else, including explosiveness in the running game outside of Deonta Foreman. It just didn't work out in their favor, but the main ingredient here was Ryan Tannehill's three interceptions put this football team in peril, and sometimes in the playoffs, that's all it takes here. A lower scoring game, 19-16. If Tannehill doesn't have any turnovers in this game, the Titans walk away with a victory. And how many times do we say it, regardless if it's regular season, postseason, Super Bowl? The team that wins the turnover battle particularly usually wins the football game as well.
Except for in Tampa Bay, because Tom Brady was terrible. We'll probably get back to that game. But quickly on the Cincinnati Bengals, and we'll make a couple points on them, but I want to make this one. Donnie, I am someone who banged the table for them to draft Penei Sewell. I thought it was ridiculous that just because these two played in college together, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, that they were going to pass up on a very important addition to the offensive line. Joe Burrow was sacked 9 times in this game. And there is no world I am going to come in here and tell you that they did anything other than make the absolute best pick for their team by bringing in Ja'Marr Chase. A rock star, auto top 10 wide receiver in the sport. 2 games so far in the postseason, 14 catches and 225 receiving yards. He has been unbelievable and is clearly, Donnie, the guy that they needed because Joe Burrow and he were always going to make this work here. This is a duo, Donnie, that for a decade plus is going to be the key factor in Cincinnati. Unbelievable stuff.
Exactly. And sometimes you don't get to see that in smaller market cities like Cincinnati, but they can wrap these two guys up. You can have a long, long run. But I want to touch on the one thing you just brought up here quickly. 9 sacks for 68 yards, and they won the football game. 9 times Joe Burrow got sacked, which means 9 dropback passes that ended in like -5 to 10 yards apiece. How did they win this game? I'll still never know. That is an unbelievable statistic.
We will close out this game and the rest of divisional round weekend after a quick break, and then we'll preview some Monday hoops for you right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Closing out our divisional round recap. But again, this game is referenced, of course, throughout the entire week here on the Early Line across the Sports Grid Network, no doubt. The Cincinnati Bengals beat the Tennessee Titans. And the 9 sacks, I think, is a concern moving forward. But ultimately, Donnie, this team plays with a confidence about themselves that is very important. And again, referencing some post-game comments from these games here, Joe Burrow said, listen, I'm tired of being the underdog. We're a really good football team, and we can beat anyone. For me, Donnie, far more refreshing than Will Anderson pretending that Alabama is an underdog to the Cincinnati Bearcats here. DRS, you watched this Cincy performance. Tomorrow we'll do the Early Lines preview. A 7-point underdog as they go to Arrowhead there, Donnie. When you look at Cincinnati, does this look like a group that can go out and win themselves a Super Bowl this year?
I mean, why not at this point, right? You won ugly against the Vegas Raiders, where you had to get a late interception, which teaches you, hey, we can do this if there's time and adversity on the line. Or how about going on the road against the number one overall seed that had a bye week, and you outplayed them on their own field, including not having the football with under a minute to go when it looked like the Tennessee Titans were the team that were going to be driving to get the winning field goal. You end up stealing that there. And also, let's keep in mind also, heading into the playoffs, into the Super Bowl, into the late rounds, how about having a kicker that says, you know what, I got a 50-plus yard field goal here in the opposing team stadium for a chance to get to the AFC Championship game? And it's not, Kevin, a 17-yarder, a 22-yarder, a 30-yarder, a 50-plus yarder where you run out to the field, you tell Joe Burrow, hey, kid, looks like we're going to the AFC Championship game, and then absolutely smoke that kick and walk off the field. And also, you're right, post-game press conferences, post-game locker room here. You get in there, and CJ Uzoma, the tight end for the Cincinnati Bengals, goes, hey, why not us? And Joe Burrow goes, cuts that out. Like, why not us is basically a, hey, we can win too, even if everybody else is better than us. Cut that out here. We're just as good as everybody here, and we're out to prove it. I love the swag that Cincinnati's playing with. It can only help them because even if you are now still playing with what we like to call house money, where nobody thought we could get this far, we're here. We expect to win at this point. I love the attitude.
I agree. And look, do I think they're going to win next week? We'll get there in time. But they already beat the Kansas City Chiefs. That's confidence. And they beat them in a shootout. So they know they can hang with them in that kind of style. And throughout this postseason early here, Donnie, they've been winning with some really good defensive performances and specifically defensive plays overall. Cincinnati has a lot of confidence, and it's more than understandable. I have one last question for you from the divisional round, and then I'll see if you have any other closing thoughts. But it's relevant to a conversation that we've talked about in some different areas here. The Super Bowl, obviously, the Super Bowl MVP, rather, is an award that is dominated by quarterbacks. But we've wondered, Donnie, are there some guys that could potentially take the awards off of their respective quarterbacks here? Again, ultimately, there's no world where you would convince me that Jimmy Garoppolo should be the favorite of any San Francisco 49er. I don't care. That's besides the point. I'm going to use Rams-Bucks as the reference, Donnie. If Rams-Bucks was the Super Bowl, who would have won Super Bowl MVP?
If you're looking at it objectively here, it actually should be Matthew Stafford, because if you want to play in totality, there was a monster fumble that Cooper Kupp had in that game. But typically from a quarterback perspective, the only thing we care about is when the quarterback actually turns it over. But I would have to say, if you take that out, most voters probably wouldn't even go that far down the rabbit hole. Sometimes it's the totality, Kevin, of the season that you just watched. Matthew Stafford was very good this year, but you're talking about Cooper Kupp, who was extraordinary this year, almost breaking an all-time record. And then you flip it over to the playoffs, where he was the best wide receiver on the football field and probably the best overall player on the field. 9 catches for 183 and a touchdown. And here's why I probably give it to Cooper Kupp over Matthew Stafford. The biggest play of the football game, yes, was a pass from Matthew Stafford. But let's just say Van Jefferson caught that last pass here, and Cooper Kupp finished with 9 for 183 and a touchdown, and that didn't factor in at all. You'd say, boy, Matthew Stafford really stepped up to the plate. But now you have to equate it to saying, now hold on, I understand Stafford threw that pass, but Cooper Kupp caught it. Best wide receiver all year. Best player in this football game. I might have actually given it, the Super Bowl MVP, to Cooper Kupp over Matthew Stafford, even though I do believe it's a quarterback award.
It's really funny because I've kind of been down to the one who's like, I'm telling you, some of these other guys have a shout. I think you set it up perfectly, though. I think Stafford was the MVP. I think Kupp probably wins it, though, because Kupp's kind of like the guy. But Stafford didn't turn it over. Ultimately, he accounted for 3 touchdowns, 366 yards. But Kupp, those last 2 catches there, the touchdown reception. But I think, ultimately, I will use this as a reference, and it is something we will set up, I know, during this week, and obviously when the Super Bowl matchup is set. It is a quarterback award. I'll tell you this, like when it comes to Kansas City, Donnie, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, I don't know if there's anything those two can do because it's too tied to Mahomes' success. But Kupp has this way to isolate on an island. Debo has that same way. Does Jamar Chase have that? We'll talk about that all. What a fun weekend of action, Donnie. Ultimately, probably the best divisional round we will ever see. Every single game was decided on the last play. I know you'll talk about this more in Listen Up, but any other closing thoughts from the weekend or just an isolated game before we move over to a little bit of Monday preview?
Yeah, it's no surprise, Kevin, that every single year, and I touted this for the past 2 weeks coming up, my favorite plays of football usually come from divisional round because you can't hide. The big boys are all out there. The guys who already won a playoff game are involved. I love divisional round. And it's a shame because we're going to look at this from year to year. I'm like, oh, there was four games that were all blowouts here. And say, no. Remember that time back in, 2022 here where you got absolutely after it in that divisional round. So much fun to watch all the way through. Captivated you from the opening kickoff there in the Cincinnati, Tennessee, right through to up around 10 o'clock, 10:30 Eastern time. Sensational football all the way through. That's why NFL is king here, Kev.
It was absolutely wonderful. The last thing I'll say, because you can't say it enough, 447 total yards and four total touchdowns for Patrick Mahomes against the best defense in the NFL. Maybe the best performance of his career, and that's saying something because in 4 years' time, he has already put forward some of the best performances we have seen. Stunning, stunning stuff, a stunning game, a stunning weekend, one that I wish we had quadruple the show time to talk about here. 7 hours on every game. It was absolutely delightful stuff. But again, these will be weaved in, no doubt, throughout the week. But it's Monday, which means there's new games, there's new action, and people are going to look to get involved here. So let's get involved ourselves, Donnie. Quickly, the college game features a good one. I'll tell you what, as much as obviously everyone was focused over in the NFL, rightfully so, college had a lot of interesting stuff happen over the weekend. One really interesting spot, Donnie, was Kansas, almost being upset by Kansas State. Really, really fascinating here. They're now going to host a Texas Tech team, Donnie, that is 5-2 in conference. Their one loss was oddly to that Kansas State team and then Iowa State, but they got that one back. We've seen Tech win at Baylor. DRS, the number is 6.5 right now for the Jayhawks at home. Total checks in at 140. Couple of top 25 teams in the country. What jumps out?
Yeah, let's set the table here. And again, here's what we're moving each and every week. Right? The NFL winds down, so we start to take more and more attention and more of a looks here as we head towards March Madness. So you are getting some conference games under wraps here. Texas Tech 5-2, which means 7 conference games. Same thing with Kansas, 5-1 in conference play. 15-4 and 16-2 respectively between the two programs. 15-4 for Texas Tech and 16-2 for Kansas. How about the road? This is always what we're going to take a look at also, Kevin, which makes it tough to bet some of these games. 1-3 in true road games here for Texas Tech. Now, you're going to Fog Allen. Kansas always plays well there, Kevin. No surprise this year. 8-0 to open the season. Now, here's what's interesting coming into this game. If you take a look at Kansas's defense, they do have a pretty good defense here, just looking in conference play only. The one issue that I have with their defense, they're last in the Big 12, Kevin, at forcing turnovers. Now, you look at turnover percentage for Texas Tech, they're number 3 in conference play for not turning it over. So, you're going to get more shots at the rim, less pressure in the backcourt, easier sets to open up. Now, here's what I do like as well. Sometimes some of these other numbers that we talk about, like, hey, how do they shoot threes? How do they do inside the arc? How do they do from the free throw line? How about this one, Kevin? Just getting to the free throw line can be a big deal, particularly when you go on the road. You know who's number 1 in conference play, getting to the line in Big 12 play? That's Texas Tech here, and that could bode well. And also, when you take a look at 10 teams in that conference, number 6 overall at fouling, that is Kansas, so maybe you have a little bit of an advantage there. Kansas's offense, very good. Number 1 overall in Big 12 play. They do a great job with offensive rebounding, but here's another difference here, one of those slight things that some people try to look over. Number 1 in conference play, Texas Tech's defense, Kevin, at turning the other team over. Why is that big? You know who's number 7 in conference at turning the ball over themselves on offense? That is the Kansas Jayhawks. I don't know if Texas Tech can go in and beat Kansas outright because it's hard to do at Allen Fieldhouse. But you know what? This today on a Monday at this time, I'm leaning towards taking the points at 6.5 with Texas Tech. I think they could stick around that number and make it really competitive late into that game.
All in all, we've seen Texas Tech already beat this team, hosted them early season, and were able to win 75-67. And Kansas, by the way, was a 7-point favorite in that game. So it goes to show how much the teams have changed, Donnie, right? Kansas laid 7 at Texas Tech, now home, laying under that number. And just to add to your kind of thoughts here on Texas Tech, 4-1 this season against the spread as an underdog. They have been a strong, strong team early season. That'll be a great game in the Big 12. Shifting over towards the NBA, 4 games tonight to sink your teeth into. Cavs-Knicks opens up the slate, but I want to go to the last game, Donnie, because it's the game that jumps out. A couple of 30-win teams doing battle. The Phoenix Suns host the Utah Jazz. The problem with this game, though, health. Donovan Mitchell, I believe, is already ruled out. Rudy Gobert listed day-to-day. DeAndre Ayton also likely going to miss this game for the Phoenix Suns. We've got a 9.5-point spread here and a total that checks in at 222.5. DRS, what do you think here when you see Suns-Jazz?
Yeah, it should be an easy win for the Suns here. I mean, you just take a look at the starting lineups that we're anticipating tonight, Kevin. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, JaVale McGee. Obviously, there is a big guy missing in that lineup that we would like to have in there. But take a look at the Utah Jazz, also missing guys. Connolly, Forrest, Ingles, O'Neal, and Whiteside. So the first thing I look at, Kevin, is usually tempo is still going to be there. Over 222.5 does seem a little bit high for me. But if I'm looking from a perspective where if you're a little bit shorthanded, whether or not what team it depends on, you know, the Jordan Clarkson's off the bench, who's going to have carte blanche to just fire away and do whatever he needs to do. You want to take 10 shots? Great. Yeah. 15, 20, go ahead and get after it here. So those are the ones to look at. Also, maybe Joe Ingles from three-point range. But the one thing you can certainly be sure of here, Chris Paul, Devin Booker should be able to get off here. No question about it. Maybe a double-double prop I might be interested in here. Chris Paul, 12 points, 10 assists. Makes a little bit of sense here. Because if we're going to have a number placed, Kevin, at 222.5, you're probably looking at points here. Both teams over 100. There needs to be some assists there. Mm-hmm. And I think Chris Paul can deliver that.
Yeah, look, ultimately, keep in mind, Utah is coming off the second leg of a back-to-back playing in Golden State last night. It's a two-point dog and pushing on that number. One thing I will reference, yesterday, Chris Paul, or not yesterday, their last game, they played against Indiana on the Saturday. Chris Paul for a double-double was plus 135, and he was an assist away from the double-double at the break. He's averaging a double-double this season, Donnie. That number's going to come down, sure, but CP3 has been filling it up with the points and the assists, averaging 10.1 assists per game. Looking elsewhere, just quickly to kind of set you up here early morning, this stuff will be developing, and Donnie and I will be following it, no doubt, on In Play Sports Tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern start time early. Cavs lay 6.5 to the New York Knicks, low total 203. The Pelicans, a 2.5-point favorite to the Indiana Pacers with a middling total at 215. Same total for Bulls Thunder, but Chicago only laying 2 points to Oklahoma City as the Bulls on the second leg of that back-to-back. What a delightful Monday morning it has been. We close out. Listen up right here.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Last segment of the day for the early line on a Monday, playing armchair quarterback right here on the grid, Sirius XM channel 159. Both myself, Donnie Wrightside, and Kevin Walsh carrying you from 7 to 9 a.m. before we hand it off to the morning after and Ben Stevens. But as always, it's the last couple minutes of the show. It's time to listen up because why the football gods have really blessed us here. The football gods love us. They really do love us. You know, we make it through an entire 17-game schedule over 18 weeks to get to the playoffs, and we don't want to be disappointed. We want to be able to get after it. We want to have a lot of fun. We want to watch a lot of winning football, and particularly meaningful football. So if we take a look here on Saturday and Sunday, four games that we had combined, people here, four games that came down right to the wire with walk-off plays. If we take a look at the Bengals and the Titans, 19-16 overall. The 49ers and the Packers, 13-10. The Rams and the Buccaneers, 30-27, and the Chiefs, 42-36. And as I said, every single game was in walk-off fashion. You might not like that Tennessee Titans game. 19-6, boy, that was ugly to watch. But you know what? The finish was spectacular with a rookie kicker making contact from 52 yards. How about the night game? 13-10, boo, we usually like points. But how about this one coming all the way down to the wire with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers in freezing cold conditions in Green Bay with the snow coming down, and they weren't victorious. It was the San Francisco 49ers. And then Sunday, the day I was waiting for all week long because it felt like AFC Championship weekend, NFC Championship weekend was already here, and you had the Rams take out the greatest of all time here, 30-27. An amazing performance here by the Rams to hold on for dear life and not get themselves Atlanted, as we like to say. And then the final game, the Chiefs and the Bills. Outrageous performances by both quarterbacks in that game, leading into overtime. I wish it would have went on all night long, but it can't. But the one thing we can surmise, the football gods certainly must love us. You know what else the football gods love? More football talk with Ben Stevens and the morning after, including myself. Next.